B3. Number 6B.
In that one truth, that is eternal life, I see also that that truth has infinite individuality, infinite undividedness with its idea, so that every idea is an individual expression of that divine ideal. And so I see that this excludes the possibility that man has not a divine individuality, that man has idiosyncrasies, that man is full of such human characteristics that really bring the doom of man upon him. I can see now, this is not so, because from truth I have inherited, in truth we inherit, from truth I have inherited all ideas, because I am the compound idea man, and by inheriting these ideas I am a unique individuality. I am an individuality that has no competitor, that has no equal. I am one and the only in the whole universe. The divine life never repeats itself. It's so infinite that it has no repetition, no routine in itself, so it gives me a sense of that infinite flexibility of life. And that takes away from my life a sense of that life has a routine, that life is always the same, that nothing happens anew. Here we get the newness of life. Because I can draw from the compound idea man in truth, I can see that every time, every moment, in every situation, in every new case, I can be a new man, I can be a new individuality, always another individuality, an infinitely changing individuality. And so this takes me away from the ruts of life. And I never get into the ruts of life in that way. Every time, every day is a new day with a new mission, with a new task, and so everything is always new. There is no routine, no repetition, infinite individualization. And this gives me a feeling, therefore, that in life I am far above the mortal sense of life, far exalted above the mortal sense of life. I can see that my life has nothing to do with my life in the mortal, with that life which is organic, with that life which I live mortally on the human plane. I can see that my true life is spiritual and has the mission of God, of divine principle. And at that point I touch principle and I begin to see, because principle is ever operative, I'm ever operative. There is no chance that the divine principle is not operative within myself. It's infinitely at work. It works infinitely by itself. And it frees me from that belief that I have to make things work, that I have to make the divine principle work, that I have to demonstrate the divine principle, that I have to have spiritual power in order to demonstrate the divine principle. And I begin to see, therefore, that that whole belief of mortality, that the mortal human should operate the divine principle, is null and nothing. It has no foundation, because principle is foundational. Everything hinges and is fixed on that one divine principle operating in harmony and in system. And that takes away from me the belief, therefore, that any other system could operate for me, that there is a bodily system that could operate for me and therefore dominate me, that there is a bodily system that can be inharmonious. It's not possible if the divine system is all harmony, is reaching every part of the system. And so this again frees me from the belief that parts of the system may not be in operation, may not be under the right dominion, and therefore not operate according to harmony. The divine principle reaches through its system every part of the human body, every part of the body social, every part of the body political, every part of any system that is on this earth. It reaches every part, and I just have to see there is only one government, the government of principle. No other government, no human government, no social government, no political government, no financial government, no military government, no any kind of government can govern me. I'm under the law of the divine principle, free from the dictates of human government. And in this way I free myself that my whole system, the bodily system, my financial system, my social system, my engagement in society would not be governed by the divine principle. So I feel that I fulfill really the mission of soul. Soul has given me a mission. Soul has defined my mission. Because soul defines every identity, it defines every identity of every individuality. Therefore, my individuality has identity, and that one is defined by soul and not by me. I haven't chosen it. I cannot choose myself. I cannot choose for myself. I'm only that what God knows about me. And soul knows me in all its perfection, in all its unchangeability. In soul, I can never lose anything that is divine. Soul knows no loss. In soul, never anything comes and goes. It's always right here. It's present, and it is of the nature of that unchangeable, untouchable identity. And soul testifies for me. And so I don't need to testify for me. Soul has to do that. Soul has to protect me. Soul has to, beware me? No, you can't say. Soul has to guard me from anything that is trying to come, to flow inward. From anything that tries to deface my identity. I jolly well have to see that I'm called by God, that I carry the name of God. I call you by my name, by the name of God, in complete coincidence and therefore identity with the nature of God. And I'm not going to accept that I'm a rotten mortal. Though the human testimony would always come up and drag me down. Soul resurrects me. Soul resurrects me and always says to me, look here, you are not a mortal. You were not born and you're not going to die. You are a mission of the divine plan. And within that divine plan, your mission is clearly defined. And I don't let you go until you fulfill that mission. I have no chance to escape. I have no chance to escape my individual mission. And so this frees me from the belief that my life is really molded, so to say, by the subconscious, by the collective unconscious, by universal beliefs, by cosmic belief, that it is molded and determined and outlined by the stars, that it is under the control of anything else but soul. Therefore, I cannot be under the control of the weather. I cannot be under the control of this age. I am not the child of this century. I am the child of eternal identity. I am not going to let the present age mold and form my being. I am the idea of principle, and therefore formed by the spiritual testimony of soul, which is immortal, infinite, unlimited. Soul is never in anything. Therefore, I am never living in my mortal body. My identity is absolutely independent of my mortal body. The mortal body just comes along when I go somewhere. I can't help that. It just comes along, you know, and I have even to pay an air ticket for that mortal body. It's a funny thing, that mortal body. But it's not the mortal body that carries me here. It's my mission that carries me here. And so I jolly well see, you see, that each mission, that does a job in God is an idea, never in the body. And because soul names me, and because soul gives me my mission, I have a mission that nobody else can do. And therefore this annihilates that hideous belief under which most people are, that they have to live that life which has been given by chance. By the chance of being born into a certain nation, by the chance of having been born into a certain family, into a certain class, into a certain business, and taking on the father's business, even if I don't like, of being channelized humanly all my life, and therefore not able to fulfill my identity. I rebel against them. See, when one sees this and handles this, I know exactly when it happened, way back when I was young, a young chap, I just could see one thing. It was so clear that I never forget the feeling of it, that what I'm going to do, nobody can do. And that everybody should feel that way. And only when I do that, which nobody else can do too, I fulfill the mission of God. And if I'm going to try that, trying to do that, which somebody else can do too, and perhaps even better, then I have missed my life purpose. That's not the mission of soul. We must see that we leave all that, those swaddling clothes behind, and free ourselves from all the limitation in soul, where we see that we are freeborn to do that what God wants us to do. And always listen to that and hear the voice. That's the testimony of the spiritual sense that leads us then. And it's an enormously freeing sense. So in the way I begin to see that soul is untouched by any human hypothesis, that it cannot be distorted, I begin to see, yes, that is because soul is of the nature of spirit. Because spirit only knows one nature, the spiritual nature. Spirit is the purity of spirit only reflects spiritual qualities and never mixed up with mortal qualities, with human qualities, with material qualities. Therefore, I see that I am not mixed up with that sort of thing. That the purity of spirit takes me right out of being in a mess and being mixed up in human schemes. I begin to see something about the infinite worship of spirit. That spirit only devotes itself to itself, to its own nature, and therefore reflects infinite divine spiritual qualities, the whole nature of being. And it's so big to see that all the qualities of being are my qualities, that I am not limited to the male qualities or limited to the female qualities, that I am neither male nor female, I am not neuter either, I'm full. I'm just full of the reflection of all qualities. Therefore I feel no qualities is lacking. My substance is that I have all qualities at my disposition and I can use them ad libitum without any restriction. And that gives me a sense that that is the reality of my being, the true nature of my being. And so this annihilates the belief. See, I always go to the negative. This annihilates the belief that I'm material, that material nature can dominate me, that material nature can deface my being, my nature, my mission. But in the purity of spirit, these things cannot touch me. And I feel the infinite birth going on, that all the time, I'm freeing myself from all material conceptions, and in freeing myself from material conceptions, only the infinite impulsion of life, truth, and love bring forth within me the spiritual qualities of being. It's wonderful. And because I see that that frees me from all material conception, I begin to realize that I am only the infinite conception of mind. Mind conceived me. Mind wanted me. I am not an unwanted child. I am wanted. I am wanted by the parent mind that is God. Mind conceived of me. Mind had an ideal and was bringing out that ideal as the idea man. And so I know that in being, that one mind created only my true identity. It brought forth me as idea and wants me to be idea. It has just one great longing, great desire to see me only as idea and as nothing else. But then also I know, because mind brought me forth, created me, brought me forth, that that mind will also be responsible to see that it leads me through the whole law of creativity to the point of fulfillment. That it will not let go, that what mind has begun, mind will also fulfill. And I get the sense that because I'm aware of my being, because I'm aware, even if it's still faintly, of my ideational being, that that mind must have brought that force, and therefore mind will lead me, guide me, until that idea comes out in all its perfection, in all its fulfillment. And it will not stop until the manifestation of that one mind is being fulfilled. I just feel the complete impulsion of that mind just to work on me and to work on me and to work on me, and not to let me go, and lead and steer my thoughts into those channels which are necessary in order that the purpose of mind is brought out. I just feel that. I have no chance to escape. I am in the hands and in the will of the Divine Mind. That's the only will there is. Therefore I see I have no will of my own. Nor could a will of my own do something. And I begin to feel that I'm under the impact of the one mind, under the influence of that one mind. And because it's one mind and the all mind, no other influence can come near me. No other influence has any chance to come and infiltrate my consciousness and infiltrate the purpose of mind. I am absolutely under the influence of the one mind, and so I see no mortal mind has any power over me, has any influence over me. No erring mind can influence me. No irritating mind can influence me. No diseased mind can influence my being. Just not possible. And in this way I free myself completely of the belief that I live by chance. I live by the law of mind. By the law of mind. Law means that there is a power at work that is intelligence and leads that power, that cause, towards a perfect aim. That's law. And under that law, I stand. I am not under the law of mortal mind. I am not under the law of matter. I am not under the law of the times. I am not under the law of the body. I am not under the law of crisis. I am not under the law of frustration. No law except the divine law is forming me, guiding me, molding me, fashioning me, clothing me. That's the only thing that is working on my one and only being. And I get the sense of enormous liberation, freedom, where I feel all there is about me is mind's infinite idea. So I'm not material. That's perhaps, as I would just say it, as it flows, and if I start again in half an hour, it flows differently again. But have you seen what I have been doing? I just showed you the method. You go out from the fulfilled state of things. Within that fulfilled state of things, the counterfeit is also fulfilled, namely as nothingness. And when I see the nothingness of the counterfeit, there is nothing that can interfere with the somethingness of the divine truth. And that gives a consciousness that handles latent error. In that way, we really can sit down and cover, so to say, all the various, numberless, latent beliefs that are in the universe and that try to distort our being. And in this way, as I do that, I may treat, you see, as I do that, in a general way, treating latent error, I may be conscious in that sense of some truth, correcting some latent belief that may be the very thing that is trying to distort my being, that is trying and waiting there in the subconscious, just waiting there to come up and make trouble. But if I handle it more and more, that subconscious belief just flickers out more and more, and the only consciousness that is there and of which I am aware is then the supra consciousness of truth. So in this way I handle those evils that are latently there and may sooner or later really come up and be a danger to me. But I handle them before they can come up and see their nothingness. This is what we really need. We are perhaps once or twice in a lifetime a little bit sick and have a little bit aches and so on. What's that? Compared with the whole argument of latent belief to destroy our whole life. It's quite enough that latent belief, for instance, can lead us into a wrong way of life, instead of our unique individual way of life, just channelizes us and wangles us into a channel of life where we can't get out anymore and it's all wrong. We choose the wrong way because we are pushed by mortal mind into a way of life that is not God's way of life. These are the big errors that we have to overcome. That we are not used by mortal mind to live that life which is destined or which is outlined by any human thought. How many are on this world who are living that life which they feel is their destiny, their mission? Very few. Many just let them be kicked into a position in which they never should be. And then they are there, and then they suffer it out. A lifelong problem. A lifelong trouble. Therefore, I always teach the young people, this is your great, great demonstration to give birth to your individuality. If you can give birth to your true individuality when you are young, then you are channelized and geared into that life which love has designed for you. Then, step by step, the way opens. Yeah, well, that's the way of handling evil through the seven synonymous terms. Okay.